Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Outer Rim. This is our episode covering the last of the prequel movies, Revenge of the Andrea, of the Sith. Revenge of the Sith. That's it. Episode 3. So, my apologies on getting the last few episodes out a little later than expected. I just started a new job. Andrea's been away on vacation. Fred has been hanging
just
out wondering
there.
What the problem is with the other two of us. So, yeah.
I've been dealing with complaints.
Well, there you go. So,
please hold. Please hold.
So we're going to jump into episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. This is this is the first Star Wars movie to be rated PG-13. This is the first one where I had to sit and think, do I really want my son to watch Anakin getting all mutilated and, you know, immolated at the end of the film? But
at the beginning of the film, there's some really interesting things that happen in this movie that just make you take a seat.
That is very true. And I think every Star Wars film since then has been PG-13. I think 7, 8, Rogue One, I think, was PG-13.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So this was released May 19th, 2005. Once again, it was directed by George Lucas. He did all of the prequels. Rated PG-13. The runtime was, I believe it was 2 hours and 20 minutes. So it was a little long. The budget was The budget was $113 million. The Rotten Tomatoes score was 79%. The audience was 65%. So still technically a considered fresh on the tomato meter scale. The opening weekend for this, the box office, was $108 million. Now, keep in mind, this is 2005. So, the little bit of a difference of what was a really good opening then versus now. Domestic gross in North America was $380 million. Global was $848 million. Now, this one, the three acts, we have most of the first act happened in Coruscant. The second act was split up across Utapau, Coruscant, and a little bit on Kashyyyk. And then the third act primarily was Coruscant and Mustafar. So a lot of this movie took place on Coruscant. The major characters, of course, we have Anakin and Obi-Wan. Padme was a pretty big factor in this movie, though I think she had less screen time in this one than she did in the second one. Palpatine, obviously, a big deal. Yoda and Mace Windu. Count Dooku made an appearance for at least the first act. And then General Grievous was the big new introduction character for this movie. And we'll talk a little bit about him shortly here. I don't know about you guys. I was listening to the commentary as I was watching this, and George Lucas said, in regards to R2-D2, this is his picture. He said that early on in trying to point out that, why he had R2 in so many shots in the film. And I'm thinking, well, that's the same thing he said in the second one.
I think it's the same thing he said in the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. Go figure. Like with episode 2, all of the clones were digital. There were no clone armor physical builds. There were 72 actual physical sets. A lot of people don't know that. They assume everything was blue screen, which most of it was.
I was going to say, that sounds a lot bigger than I was expecting.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I didn't catch that. If they hadn't said it in the in the commentary, I probably would not have gotten it. Now, I know a lot of the sets had a lot of miniatures work, like the pit in Utapau. That was actually a big foam set that they had taken, like X-Acto knives, and chiseled the foam out to make the rocks and all that. So at Celebration 3, I got to talk with some of the guys from ILM's miniature shop, which now no longer exists, sadly. But what did you guys think of this one? Just like overall thoughts.
very, very dark. I thought it was probably the darkest out of all the Star Wars movies that have been out. Mm-hmm. I thought it was even darker than Rogue One, even though everyone, spoiler alert, dies in that one. Even starting from the beginning, the scenes with Anakin wearing the darker robes, always hunched forward, looking down, he just seemed darker than any of the other movies. Especially coming from the Clone Wars, he just seemed to have changed a lot. His slid to the dark side has basically taken hold. It just needs that final push.
And you feel this is even darker than Rogue One?
I thought so. At least it was harder to watch because we've built such a relationship with Anakin over the years through Clone Wars, through the first two movies. Mm-hmm. And then to see him actually become Vader was just difficult.
Okay. So emotionally, because of the personal connection we have to the character, that's really what made it feel darker than Rogue One.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, killing younglings.
Andrea, what do you think?
I thought it was a really heavy movie. It was very emotional. I felt like throughout watching these three movies, there were so many times where things could have ended differently. This is a character that a lot of the time was crying out for help. He wanted somebody to listen, but his emotions needed to be suppressed, and the only person that he can confide in was Palpatine, and we already know how that turned out, and you can see from the very beginning of this movie that he has confined about his mother's passing, his fears of losing Padme and stuff like that. So I feel like because of that, Jedi, don't show your emotions, you cannot feel anything, that leads to the dark side, blah blah blah, we kind of lose this character, and it's sad. It's sad to see just how far he falls. And there's a lot of times where he tries to reason and tries to make sense of what he's doing. And it's very interesting because I was looking at some of the facts of this movie, and in 2007, there was a psychiatrist in France who co-wrote a study that diagnosed Anakin as a borderline personality disorder character. So that was pretty interesting to read, just because of a lot of the behaviors that he displayed, like difficulty controlling anger, stress-related breaks with reality, impulsivity, obsession with abandonment, and a pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of alienation and devaluation. So I thought it was pretty interesting. I think that Anakin is such an interesting character. And like I said at the beginning, I feel like there were so many places where people could have intervened, but because of a code, that was not going to be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Even at the end of the movie, Obi-Wan says, you know, Anakin, I failed you. And I don't think it's so much that Obi-Wan has failed him as much as the Jedi Order. When you've got someone who feels like they don't fit in, and that they can't fit in, they're trying really hard to fit in, and they're just not accepted, they try to find acceptance somewhere else. Either they fall in with the wrong people, like Anakin did with Palpatine. Some people turn to different vices, whether it be drugs or alcohol or gambling or et cetera. And you see people trying to kind of fill that void in their life, fill that hole. And Anakin very much seems to represent that sort of thing. And that's exactly why Palpatine was able to get a hold of him. I think the Jedi really failed. They created Darth Vader, effectively.
Yeah. And I think that, and again, looking at the movie, it's like, did they not see what was happening? Are they so blind that Anakin, for the most part, he was not obedient. He always questioned authority, like those things. And then they send him to spy on Palpatine. And it's like, you're just creating more chaos for this character. And there is this one particular scene where Anakin is talking to Yoda, and he's trying to let him know that there is some turmoil. And all Yoda says is that you must let go of everything that causes you fear. And that's him pretty much saying, let go of Padme. because that's what you fear to lose. So it's like, that's not what Anakin's going to do. And he's going to go seek somebody that will kind of give him what he wants. And that's like, oh, we'll be able to save her. Don't you worry. And that, and again, that's just the web of lies that he gets tied up in.
Right. Well, let's take this from the beginning. I mean, we're coming off of a lot of non-movie content. We're coming off of the Clone Wars series.
Oh, yes.
And Fred, like you mentioned, we're seeing a very different Anakin in this movie than we saw in the Clone Wars. But at the beginning of this movie, you do really get the sense that there's a true partnership, a brotherhood between Anakin and Obi-Wan. So they did succeed. You know, as much as I feel like the chemistry between Anakin and Padme in this movie was kind of weak, and I think a lot of that had to do with the dialogue, Anakin and Obi-Wan, I felt, had really good chemistry. And I think that it was a pretty good transition out of the Clone Wars series. What do you think?
No, I completely agree with that. I think the Anakin-Obi-Wan friendship was really tight. They're like brothers. You can feel that through the whole movie, and you can really see it at the end when Obi-Wan's tasked with dispatching Anakin, and he can't do it. He can't bring himself to finish him off.
Right. I guess for me, the part of the solidifying of this was the whole Battle of a Coruscant scene. I think, first of all, I think that was a really good way to open up the movie. I thought the visual side of the storytelling was really good. The space battle scene, I think this was a good way to do a space battle, because not only did the visuals work really, really well, but you got inside the cockpit and you got to see... You got to relate to the pilots and what they were going through. And I think anytime you get to do that, that's what makes a good space battle scene.
I actually thought that was the best part of the movie, or the most visually stimulating part of the movie, that just the yeah. opening scene, going through all the spaceships, and panning down and see how many were below them. I thought that was just fantastic the way that yeah. they did that. With all the buzz droids, vulture droids, all the Clone Wars era ships. I thought that was really cool to see them all.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we actually get on the capital ship. And again, we see some really good teamwork for mm-hmm. the first time, cinematically at least, between Anakin and Obi-Wan. We really get to see the movement from the end of episode 2 with them fighting Dooku and Anakin kind of going off and doing his own impulsive thing. And here, they're working together as a team, which we did get to see through the Clone Wars series. But, you know, when we're looking at the movies, we kind of have to... We don't necessarily have to distance ourselves from the Clone Wars content because it is canon. And as fans, we've consumed that content. But we also have to be respectful of the fact that a lot of Star Wars fans have not watched the Clone Wars. And when I say fans, I mean... People you might not consider fans, but I know people who consider themselves big Star Wars fans who have never watched any of the television content. They don't collect things. They don't read the comic books. They're movie fans who really like Star Wars. So they don't have all of that content.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I am actually one of those fans that has not finished watching Clone Wars. I'm going at it right now. I know. Sorry.
I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't want to call you out on the show.
No, but I will admit it. But I am watching it right now, and I have so much more appreciation for a lot of the things that do happen in the movies and a lot of the characters. I was talking to Fred about this before we recorded. General Grievous is one of those characters that I wish I could have seen a lot more in the movie before I watched the Clone Wars. Right. And he's one of the ones that I actually enjoy watching in the Clone Wars. We do get a lot of Dooku. That's not something that we do get a lot in the movies. And you do see it in the Clone Wars. And I really, really, really enjoy it. So I've been hammering away at Clone Wars because it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. So.
And now we're getting more Clone Wars content.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, they just announced at San Diego Comic Con that we're getting, another 12 episodes?
12 or 13 episodes for season 7.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't say if there was going to be... This was... Okay, it's 12 episodes for season 7. They didn't say if they're going to continue beyond that.
Right.
Yeah, I think that they wanted to wrap up the whole entire show.
The implication was, that this was going to be the scripts that Dave Filoni had set up that he didn't finish. But this is for the streaming service. If it's successful... If Filoni feels like he has more stories to tell, it would not surprise me if they kept it going.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's the rumors, or the hope from the fandom right now that I'm seeing a lot on Twitter and stuff, is the hope is that, yep, they're going to wrap up season 7 and then continue into season 8. So we'll see what happens. I'm really excited either way. We get to see the end of Clone Wars where Dave really wanted it instead of being cut off like it was.
Yeah, so even if we don't get...
nothing but good news.
Yeah. Even if we just get these 12 or 13 episodes, that's nothing to get upset about not getting more beyond that. I mean, this is still incredible news. And back to what Andrea said, I want to point out, too, that, I mean, I used to host a Star Wars podcast for TheForce.net that later became The Force Cast. I left it. Other people started up The Force Cast in its place. I was not watching The Clone Wars, and they asked me to come on as a guest host for an episode of the Clone Wars Roundtable. And I had to go and buy the first season from iTunes. And I think, I forget whether the second season was available on demand or what the situation was, but I frantically had to watch, like binge watch the first two seasons. And then I got hooked, and then I watched it after that. But I want to point out too, that I was enough of a Star Wars fan that I was doing relatively popular podcast on it and still was not watching the Clone Wars. So before anybody jumps down Andrea's throat, I just want to say,
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, I would not want to throw down with Andrea. That's true.
Yes, that's very true.
And so, just for clarity, I watched the Clone Wars, all of them probably, 4 years ago, 5 years ago? Okay. So I would like to rewatch them now, hopefully before the new season, the new stuff comes out. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be going back and rewatching them now. I've just started. I've got to go back and watch. I think Netflix has the original movie now, too, the theatrical release. I dread going back and watching that because I remember seeing it in the theater and not being very. In fact, that was what made me not watch the cartoon, like the ongoing series, I think, was my dislike for that. But I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it just because, to be fair, I've not seen it again since then. So. But back to the movie, back to not Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. We do need to kind of take this in the context of what it is as this film. So we see the first inkling of Palpatine starting to turn Anakin more proactively when Obi-Wan is knocked out. Palpatine tells Anakin, kill him.
I wish that would have been developed a little bit more. Because it was just like very, I don't know, it was a little bit random that he had so much control and we don't see that prior to this movie. It was very interesting because during the original filming of the movie, there was a lot more dialogue during the scene where you see Palpatine talking to Anakin a lot more. And one of the things that I was reading into was that Palpatine exposes Dooku as paying the Tusken Raiders to kidnap Anakin's mom. So again, building up that anger, giving him the justification of killing Count Dooku, not just because he cut off my arm. So I thought that would have been a lot nicer. And it's really nice just to see Count Dooku look at Palpatine as soon as he's like, just do it, just kill him, because it's that they were working together, right?
It's like, wait a minute, what? What'd you say? You're joking, right? He's not actually going to do it. Yeah.
So interestingly enough, the original cut of the film actually was recorded and was about 4 hours long. One of the scenes that they cut most of the dialogue from was the rescue scene. And then it was later re-released in one of the video games.
Oh, now that part I did not know. I know there were a lot of deleted scenes. But
do you know what video game it was?
Might have been the Episode 3 video game. Well, there was an actual Episode 3 game, I think.
There's actually an Episode 3 game, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
One thing I want to point out as we go through talking about this movie, and it was kind of the same thing with Attack of the Clones, but I think even more so with this, George Lucas himself pointed out that he had about 5 or 6 hours worth of content to cram into 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And it shows.
Yes.
The novelization, though, the one written by Matthew Stover, is absolutely incredible. And I was on the fence about whether to read it before going in to see the movie. And it was the same situation with episode two. And I'm glad that I did, because for all of the complaints about Anakin's turn to the dark side being too fast and too unexplained, the book gave you so much more insight to Anakin's inner monologue that it all made sense. And while I'm watching the movie, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, I know a lot of people are going to get bugged out by that, but it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Because I had that extra piece. And I don't think you should have to have that extra piece. I think that is
exactly
a failing of the movie. And I'm not going to defend the movie on that point. I think that they should have done a better job of somehow portraying the conflict going on inside Anakin. And it's hard to do. But for those who really want to get something more out of this film, you've got to read the novelization. It is so much, it gives you so much extra, more so than a lot of other movie novelizations that I've read, perhaps more than any other film novelization. This is the best. And the author is great. If you've never read anything by Matthew Stover, he's incredible. I highly recommend that you pick up this novelization. It'll put an entirely different spin on this movie for you. So,
I did read the book, but it's probably been 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'd have to read it again I just don't recall.
Yeah. I don't think I've read it since the movie came out. I typically don't go back and reread books very much at all. But I would say that it gives a much better justification for Anakin deciding to side with Sidious. And, you know, we mentioned the battle over Coruscant. One thing I want to point out, a lot of people seem to be confused about. This battle didn't happen in space. This battle happened in the upper atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's why you see a lot of different physics involved. That's why when the ship breaks apart, it starts falling toward the planet. They're in gravity, technically.
Very high gravity, but in gravity.
Right. Yeah. I loved the shots, by the way, as it's coming in of Coruscant. Pretty much every shot of Coruscant in this movie.
Yes.
You know, say what you will about the prequels, but the visual establishing shots are incredible. And this movie, even better than episode two, I think.
Oh, absolutely fantastic.
I agree.
So, is there anything else that you guys want to say about the first act? I mean, it was pretty clear cut.
Like we already touched on earlier, I would have liked to seen a little bit more backstory on General Grievous, just for a little context. Like, yeah. Who is this guy and why is he so badass?
Why is he coughing all over the place?
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people thought he was a droid because they don't reveal later in the movie that there's anything organic inside of him. And even then, what you see is basically this little shriveled heart. Yeah. Later on,
it's
and you're
cringe.
Like, wait a minute.
What? Exactly.
What's this? And they took the Grinch's heart and put it in a robot. There you go. But, you know, why would you have a droid who's coughing? And this was actually explained in the there was another Clone Wars series by, I always get the guy's last name messed up. I'm not even going to try to do it, but it's the same guy who did the animation for Samurai Jack and some other popular cartoons. But he did a series of little mini episodes that were like maybe 5 minutes long or something that aired on the Cartoon Network. And he did two seasons of these. And they were very stylistic, very over-exaggerated. There wasn't really an overall continuity to any of them. They're just little vignettes. But the last one was Grievous actually capturing Palpatine on Coruscant and escaping Coruscant, which led to this battle. And Mace Windu, you know, they're chasing him down and he catches Grievous just before Grievous enters the ship. And he reaches out with his hand and he closes his hand and kind of crushes the rib cage, the chest plate of Grievous. And the argument is that that's what causes the cough, which, again, that's great, except it happens in a little Cartoon Network in between commercial break sort of thing. So that really doesn't explain it to anybody who goes to see the movie. So that was a little disappointing. But Grievous was another one of those characters who he was designed really well, and he was awesome. And I remember that at Celebration 3, this was April something, and the movie aired a month later. Someone had the leaked footage of the battle scene between Grievous and Obi-Wan. I got to watch it on someone's laptop, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be like the best Star Wars character ever. This is incredible. And then we get to the movie, and it's like, well, it's basically just that scene we shot. And then Grievous runs away. Obi-Wan chases him. It's like, well, wait a minute. That needed to be more epic. That needed to be like bigger. Dude's got four lightsabers and four arms. And it's like Obi-Wan just... It almost made it look like it was effortless for Obi-Wan. Like it wasn't even that difficult to fight.
But it fits his character for the Clone Wars.
It does. I get the whole, and kind of the cowardice and the, him always running away and all that. And that's something that Lucas pointed out in the commentary. He wanted him to be more of kind of the sleazebag villain who was more of an opportunist, you know, and would duck out rather than have a fair fight. But
scoundrel,
when his arms split open and he's got these four lightsabers, you're like, oh wow, Obi-Wan's in deep crap now. And but, no, like 10 seconds later, he's already chopped two of the arms off. It's like, what?
I would have liked to seen that fight scene last a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Be a little bit more dire and Obi-Wan fight back, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. It just seemed a little bit too easy.
But speaking about the fighting, there were so many nice battles and fights in this movie. I thought that was enjoyable, especially at the beginning and at the very end. There was a lot of time taken to master fencing in order to do a lot of the shots. And it was nice. It was nice seeing a lot of battles. I felt really bad for the droids. I always do, especially after watching Clone Wars.
Why do you feel bad for the droids?
Because they're so stupid.
Well, yeah, but...
They should have made more destroyers. They would have won.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think they mass-produced the wrong model. That's what the problem was. Battles. Wow. So, for me, I think that... You know, in my notes, I did a breakdown of the third acts of all of the different Star Wars movies just to kind of compare. And I know we're not really at the third act discussion yet. But, we'll come back to the battles in a minute. The second act, I want to talk about that a little bit. To me, the second act felt, if you want to count that as everything after the Battle of Coruscant through to Order 66, it felt slow.
So right after the battle, Anakin lands on the Coruscant. He meets up with Padme, who's pregnant. Mm-hmm. I just thought that whole scene was really rough. Like, yeah. I understand what he was trying to do, but they're supposed to be in secret, but they're in such an open space.
Yes.
I thought that was
nobody
very...
walk around this pillar, okay? You guys just stay over there. Don't walk over here.
She's literally lurking in a shadow.
Right. I mean, it's
but
not...
she's some big senator.
And then, like, he actually says to someone, I don't know if it was Bail Organa or Mace Windu or something, he says, oh, excuse me a minute, and walks over to Padme. It's like, it wasn't even...
It was Bail, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I have to go use the restroom. I'm going to go down this other hallway at the other end of the building or something. It's like right there.
Jedi business.
He could have just along. Turned around. Right.
Yeah, oh, hey, Padme, yeah, let me have a private conversation with you real quick.
It's probably super echoey in there.
Right. not subtle. And not good. I'm sorry, but I thought that nearly every scene between Anakin and Padme was cringeworthy.
The last one was okay.
Yeah, the last one was okay. But the balcony scene...
Yeah.
I thought the dialogue was just, ugh. George, have someone else write your dialogue, dude. I love you, man, but.
I see what they're trying to do. Like, they're trying to make his fall to the dark side be a wedge between their relationship.
Yeah.
And that was working to a certain degree, but just not well enough.
Yeah. And again, a lot of people, I think Hayden Christensen gets a bad rap. I think way too much of the problems with this gets dropped on him. And I don't think that's it, because everywhere else in the movie, he gives great performances. And we mm-hmm. talked about this in episode 2 as well. It's just something about, I don't think that George Lucas is good at writing semi-romantic dialogue. I'm not ripping on George. He's one of the best storytellers of all time, in my opinion. I mean, he's created this world and all of this stuff going on, and he's a great editor, and his conceptual stuff is just, other people can't come near him. But when it comes to writing dialogue, specifically something romantic, I just think that's not in his wheelhouse. And that's okay. You know, nobody has to be perfect at everything, but this just didn't work for me. And yet, again, the chemistry between Anakin and Obi-Wan worked really well. I thought that was good. So,
it's interesting because they actually suggested having a dialogue coach for this movie because it was so emotionally intense. I guess they devoted that dialogue coaching for the dark side and Anakin suffering instead of the romantic aspects of it. Because I do agree, some of it was cheesy. I think they were trying to build more of a supportive system between Padme and Anakin, where she was like, you can talk to me, what is going on? But he just doesn't want to. But it just fell a little short.
Yeah.
Speaking of acting, and doing a really good job, Ian McDiarmid, I think, absolutely nailed it. The two different roles between Senator Palpatine and Lord Sidious, like, I thought he just absolutely nailed the transitions between the two characters that he was playing.
The tone of voice when he says, do it, after do he's it. Just like, oh, he does a really good job. I do agree with that.
And the change in the facial tone and everything, too. Yes. It was mm-hmm. like just something clicked and he's a different character. And you really saw that there for a second. I think he is one of the characters in the prequels, for all of the talk about some of the dialogue. He is one of the actors who has been able to surpass any dialogue problems and provide an excellent delivery regardless of what was written on the page.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And him, Ewan, Liam Neeson, if nothing else, then at least those three, just there's not a scene in the entire trilogy where they weren't able to transcend any issues that were on the page. Now, that being said, I do have an issue with some of Ian's performance later on, and I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail about it, but we'll get to that in a few minutes, too.
Sure.
So what else happened in Act 2? I mean, we've got
Palpatine
the Utapau stuff.
Assigns Anakin to the Jedi Council.
Yes.
So he supersedes the Jedi Council's own structure and physically puts him in charge, basically gives him a seat. Now, I don't think that he should have ever even had the right to do that.
I agree.
And I agree that the Jedi Council used that appointment to get a backdoor into the senators, like to spy on him.
Yeah. But you have to know that he knew that. Like, I feel like he was using that situation as a way to create a larger rift between Anakin and the Jedi Council. Like, he knew it wasn't going to sit well with the Council, and he knew that Anakin would see it, and that Anakin would then become resentful over it. So,
because everybody was like, well, you don't deserve to be here. We're not going to call you a master. Right. That's offensive to Anakin because he has worked, and he saw it as an insult. And again, like you said, Eric, it just builds more of that resentment, that drift between him and the Jedi Order.
Yeah, I don't think Palpatine was actually, he didn't need a representative there. He didn't need any of that. He was just messing further with Anakin.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, what I'm trying to think, I feel like there was more that happened in this. Like I said, the second act seemed like it dragged on a lot. I mean, I understand that the scenes in there were necessary, but a lot of them just seemed like exposition half the time.
There was the opera scene when they were talking about Plagueis.
Yes.
True.
That was very important.
And that was really important. Good scene. Yeah.
And I love the special effects of the opera itself. If he ignored what was being said, yeah. just watched what was happening, I thought that was
yeah.
just wow.
It was really good. A quick question. I want to ask you guys just some episode 9 speculation here. None of this is spoilers. It's just speculation. The speculation that Snoke is Plagueis has come up again, and maybe we'll talk about that later on, but just like quick, like 5 seconds or less, what's your take on that? Any possibility?
I've heard it before.
Yep.
I did not like Snoke, so I don't know. I don't know how I feel about all this.
I'm all for this. I predicted this quite a while ago, and then it appeared to have been shot down, but then subsequent questions asked of Abrams and Daisy Ridley were avoided rather proactively. And there's some rumors now that it's something that might be getting considered, that Snoke will have been Plagueis.
I feel like it's a possibility because of how easily he was, quote unquote, defeated. Mm-hmm. I feel like because everybody was like, oh, he's going to be such a big character, he goes down like an idiot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have anything against Plagueis being the next villain in episode 9. I don't think Kylo Ren has the chops to be the leader. He doesn't have the mastermind ability to do it. So yeah. It needs to be somebody else. So be it Plagueis, be it a clone of the Emperor, be it whatever theory you want to go with.
Well, we're talking, though, that Snoke actually is Plagueis.
Do you think that Plagueis died then in 8?
Well, I don't know. See, that's a good question, because in this scene with the opera, Palpatine is telling Anakin that Plagueis he had the secret to cheating death.
Yes.
So maybe we get Snoke because, you know, I've been a very vocal complainer about the fact that we got no information on Snoke. We're supposed to be invested in him as a villain.
Yeah.
And yet, for what? So it would not surprise me if he ends up being Plagueis, that somehow this aspect of Plagueis being able to cheat death means we see Snoke again in some form in episode 9, whether it's he's reincarnated, whether it's a Force ghost, whether it's, you know, whatever it is.
We have precedent for Sith Lords being cut in half and surviving.
That is very true. Very true. All right. Well, back to episode 3. I agree that was, it's one of those things where that scene was delivered really, really well. Again, some great acting. The visuals, I love that. Wouldn't it be like an awesome screensaver or like a desktop background to just have that squid opera thing going?
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, rewatching, once you've seen the movie 500,000 times, it's kind of like, this is a good time to get up and go to the bathroom. Like, yeah. You already kind of know, you know, you can skip ahead a little bit. But
yeah, he's doing the final push to the dark side. He's yeah. setting the seeds.
Well, that's the thing, and that's the most important seed for him to plant, is that there is a way to save Padme.
Yeah.
So now we get the attempted arrest of Palpatine. And this is another thing that in the book, I think, played off a lot better. So in the book, it's interesting because Palpatine can tell that they're coming. Because, of course, he had the confrontation with Anakin, and Anakin says, oh, I'm telling. And he goes, runs to tell his mom. Oh, wait, she's dead. Never mind. Runs off to tell.
Too soon?
Okay. And so he knows that they're coming. So he had hid his lightsaber all this time inside one of the statues. And so he uses the Force to ignite it, which, you know, blows a hole through the statue, and then it slides out, and then he has his lightsaber. And when they come in to his office, you don't know this later until he's in front of the Senate and he's playing back the audio recording, but you realize that the actual dialogue between the Jedi and Palpatine's responses were all done in such a way that it made him look like the victim. And so he had this audio recording he was doing in the meantime, so that when he played it in front of the Senate, it looked like the Jedi were being the aggressors. He was, you know, completely caught off guard and, you know, Jedi, what are you doing? Why are you here? And blah, blah, blah. And that's something that never came across in the movie. And then just the nature of that scene in the book, I think, was really impressive, where in the movie it looked really weak. I mean, he kills two of the Jedi Masters with, I mean, one of them, it's like he's looking around like, I have a lightsaber. Should I swing it? Should I just hold it menacingly? Or, oh, hey, I'm sliced open. Never mind. Bye-bye.
That would have been me. It's really funny because my note was that Palpatine made the Jedi look so weak.
Right. And some people have argued, well, it's because he used the dark side to kind of cloud their minds a little bit, so they were disoriented or whatever. Okay. I can see that.
But that's far-reaching because you don't see that in the movie, right? Like,
it is a stretch. Yeah.
But before we continue with that, because there is also, like, when Anakin confronts Mace Windu and stuff like that,
right.
There are a lot of times in this movie where it's not just about the characters, it's also the setting, the scenes that do play a part in how everybody should feel. The sunset shots before the Jedi go and confront Palpatine are very important because it's the end of the day, the end of the light, and the start of the night, the start of the dark side. And that's just a beautiful contrast because it leads to what happens next. The light is fading, and as you see the sunset, you also see Anakin crying.
Yes.
And that is really powerful, and it just goes downhill from there.
Continue with that motif, too. All of the scenes after that are filmed with much darker lighting.
Yes. And this is not the only time that they do it. I'll bring it back when we go into the third act. But that was the first time I noticed that contrast between day, night, light, darkness. And you do see how dark the film gets after this point. But yeah, let's go back to Palpatine and the Jedi, who are weak.
So, speaking of Sith Lords getting chopped in half and surviving just fine, I have to think that in Coruscant, where the buildings are really tall, if you get thrown out of a window and you're a Jedi and you can use the Force, that there's got to be a really, really darn good chance of you kind of maneuvering your way over to like a canopy or like a little flagpole thing or something you can grab onto like Batman and kind of swing off onto another
Anakin
ledge or something.
Right. Or a flying car or a flying droid.
Obi-Wan Kenobi did it. So,
I'm thinking Mace Windu.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah, I want my Windu standalone movie. We'll just call it Mace.
Wait, how many? Did he lose both arms or just one?
Mace Windu didn't lose any.
Oh, wait.
I don't think.
I'm well, pretty no, I sure guess
he lost.
He lost
a hand.
He lost a hand. Okay. Well, that's
yeah,
fixable.
But who doesn't? I mean, if you're a Jedi, that's like that's your hazing right there. I mean, that's
well, you get
that
the
before you get your
discount.
First stripes, right? Yeah.
Give the other one to somebody else who lost it.
Right. So I don't know. I think Mace. It's got a pretty good chance of. I want to know who got his lightsaber too, because that's like the best lightsaber in the entire saga. You know, the latinum finish and stuff on the handle, the purple blade, and you know, there's some like street rat down on the ground somewhere. He's like, oh, what's this? And, you know, he's walking
maybe
around.
Maybe that should be the story.
Now.
It's Mace trying to get back his lightsaber. We got something here.
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, can we go back to the movie review?
Yeah, what did you guys think of this actual moment with Anakin? I mean, I get the fact that he didn't want Palpatine to get executed, and that looked like what Mace was going to do, because then the secret of saving Padme would be lost, and he wanted him to go to trial. And Mace Windu points out, well, yeah, a trial? Like, what's that going to do?
Can we back up just a little further?
Yeah,
Four Jedi show up. Sidious cut down three of them within three strokes.
Yes.
Just wow. I wanted to see a little bit more battle between those four.
Yeah, they were good enough to survive the Battle of Geonosis. You'd think that they wouldn't get killed in one stroke each. You know? Oh, a quick bit of trivia. Kit Fisto and, I'm going to mispronounce this, is it Sacy Tin? The guy with the big horns on the side of his head?
Yep.
In episode 2, they grab two guys, I think from Lucasfilm's IT staff, two brothers, to play those Jedi. Those two brothers also happen to be producers on the TV show Survivor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think their last name is Jensen. I got to interview him back in 2005. And they were really bummed out because they said their role on Survivor meant they couldn't be in episode 3. And this would have been the first time that the two brothers would have had a scene together, because in episode 2, those two Jedi weren't in the same scenes. And now they get a scene together and they didn't get to actually play the Jedi. So that was kind of a bummer for them. Yeah.
I like Kit Fisto. It was so sad seeing him go down like he did. It was so tragic.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what bar that Mace Windu was running past and said, "Hey, you three with me." And they're like, "Oh, man, I'm so wasted. Where the rest of the I mean, they had to be drunk or something, right?
Probably.
Probably stoned. Look at these lights. So cool.
Either that, right? Either that or they need some, like, way better lightsaber training. That was disappointing.
So, and then Mace and Sidious, they fight, and then the window breaks open. Badly. That's pretty cool.
Can we go back to that too? Because like the worst lightsaber battle. And listen, I understand that Ian McDiarmid is old and Samuel Jackson is old, but I mean, even then, they used stunt people, and then they had they put Ian McDiarmid's head over top of the stunt person. And they did that in a few other places too. They did it in episode 2. They did it several places in this movie, but man, that lightsaber battle was
clunky.
That's a clunky. Yes. It was clunky.
It was like the droids were having lightsaber battles.
Just about.
I understand that Sidious wanted to lose. To make Anakin finish his move, but still, it doesn't mean the fight scene needed to be terrible.
Right. And Mace Windu, like, according, well, I guess it's not canon anymore. It used to be Mace Windu was considered
the best.
Yeah, there were seven different forms of lightsaber fighting techniques, and he was one of the only people to master the seventh form, which was supposed to be, like, you know, the ultimate Jedi ninja sort of fighting style. So
akin to, like, Dooku. Like, how afraid Yoda was to fight Dooku.
Yeah. If you go with what used to be canon, Mace Windu was supposed to have put Dooku to shame. Like, he was just that superior a fighter. And then you see this. And the thing is, like, we were all, you know, we had read this in the books, and we hear that Mace Windu is going to have this lightsaber battle in episode 3. And oh, it's going to be awesome. This is going to be like the best thing ever. And then it happens, and it's like, wow, that was kind of like Obi-Wan and Vader in episode 4. It's like they hit the swords a couple times, and they talk, and they hit the swords a couple times, and one of them puts his sword up. The other one swipes it across his stomach. We're done.
Goes through the window.
Yeah. So, that was a little rough.
Fred did say that, what was it? It was 4 hours, the original complete. The
original cut, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, did they have to cut a lot of the fighting?
I don't think that's what it was.
Should they have done a 3.5?
I don't think there's probably a lot of deleted scenes with that fight. I just think it wasn't. I think the choreography just, it wasn't ever designed to be that intense a fight.
Yeah. What did you think of his lightning attack? I guess later Yoda fights him, and Yoda has a really hard time fighting him. Then the lightning attack is what really did him in.
Yeah. I mean, Yoda manages to kind of ball it up into this little ball of force lightning and shoot it back at him. And he did kind of the same thing with Dooku in episode two. Well, so we know Yoda is able to do that.
He went across the room.
Well, that's true.
He did bounce off a wall.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
He's little. He can bounce. He's
poor
flexible.
Poor Toad.
It's kind of like a snowball.
But yeah, I mean, the lightning thing, it made sense. And you know, Mace catching it on the lightsaber made sense too. I'm okay with it.
And then he stops the lightning, and then Mace lifts his lightsaber to strike him down. Anakin interrupts him to say that, you know, that has to go to trial and blah, blah, blah. And he says he's too evil, and then he hits Mace right as he's about to attack, and he falls out he gets hit with lightning again and falls out the window.
It's very interesting because Anakin is trying to talk Mace Windu to not kill him, but he does the same thing with Count Dooku. He's like, he should go to trial.
Yes.
So can somebody explain that to me?
Well, because if Palpatine dies, then he can't save Padme. Or it could be that you could turn it around and say maybe he's not entirely comfortable with having killed Dooku.
Maybe. But again, this is open to interpretation.
Well, there's more to it than that, even. He doesn't like Mace Windu. He's the one who's stopping him from becoming a master.
Yeah.
He likes Sidious. Sidious is the one who made him sit on the Jedi Council. So he wants to back up Sidious. He wants to be friends with him. So that's where his motivations are. So when Sidious says kill him, it's almost a no-brainer. He does pause, but he kills him without too much thought.
Right. Well, and you also have to look at the fact that this is the first and possibly only real moral dilemma in the entire Star Wars saga. Look at the premise that Mace is presenting. You've got someone who is allegedly manipulating this whole war.
Yep.
Millions and millions of deaths. It's not proven necessarily, but it's alleged. And Anakin does the right thing and says he needs to go to trial. He needs to face justice. Mace is saying, no, he's too evil. He'll get away with it. He'll get out of the trial, or, you know, he'll own the politicians involved with the trial and they'll give him an innocent verdict, or they'll let him off easy, or whatever the situation is. And killing him is the only way to actually end the war and bring justice. I mean, there are some really, really morally compelling arguments on either side there. So this is really perhaps the strongest moral dilemma presented across all of Star Wars. And this also happens to be Anakin's turning point. So I think that that's something too. I mean, Anakin is not wrong in jumping in and preventing Mace Windu from killing Sidious. It's not morally the wrong thing to do. And Anakin then doesn't kick Mace Windu out the window.
No.
That's Sidious.
The only morally incorrect thing that Mace was doing was willing to strike down an unarmed person.
Are you unarmed if you can shoot force lightning?
I mean, good point.
Come on, Fred.
You can knock Yoda across the room without being armed. Yeah, I don't know about unarmed. But you're right, though. I mean, so it's still, he's executing him.
Yes.
But
again, in doing that, he's ending the war. So at what cost?
Did Anakin see Palpatine use that power at the beginning? No, he didn't. So Anakin wouldn't have known. He would have just seen a person that is defenseless. No?
Anakin saw the force lightning coming from Palpatine, though.
Before or after? So isn't there two times
he walked in? When Anakin walked in, wasn't the lightning still going? Because Anakin actually watched the trance, like the melting face and all that. And that was happening during
true.
The lightning.
Yes,
part.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Which, for the record, apparently was all CG stuff done over top of Ian McDiarmid. Like, they kept the lips and the eyes and everything else around it was CG. Right up until the point where Palpatine stood up and walked over to Anakin after it was all done. All of that, his face was all CG.
Oh, I love when he puts his hood on. Oh, it's so cool. Because then you see everything from the original trilogy. So that was
Yes.
So again, I'm not saying that one answer is correct or not, but I am presenting the idea that it's a moral dilemma. And I don't think that Anakin necessarily did anything wrong by trying to step in and prevent the execution of Palpatine. And Palpatine is the one who threw Mace out the window. So, like, Anakin hadn't necessarily done anything evil right up until the point where he felt guilt over what happened and felt responsible for Mace's death, and then realized that he's, you know, there's no way for him getting out of this. And that's when he turned himself over to Sidious. So what's interesting, I think, is for all of the things that Anakin had done that were immoral, this final moment where he turns, it wasn't that he actually did anything immoral in that moment. It was that Palpatine's sense of presence and charisma kind of overpowered him and kind of helped use that as that last final push.
It's very interesting because I'm going to bring this and people are going to roll their eyes. There is a scene in Macbeth where he says that I've walked too far into blood that I can't, no, or water, something along those lines, and he cannot turn back. The best thing for him to do is continue moving forward. And that's what Anakin does. It's just like, okay, well, I've already killed someone and I feel this much guilt and I've done this, this, and this. I might as well just continue because there's no going back. I've already done so much that there is no redemption for me. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, and he already was not in favor with the Jedi Council. So
exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's, I mean, like Fred had said earlier, it's not like they're friends.
Yeah. So. If Mace didn't kill Sidious right there, would Anakin have turned?
He wouldn't have had a master.
Well, he probably wouldn't have turned then.
Yeah. I mean, Sidious would have continued to try to manipulate him, and I think there would have been an opportunity later. I don't think Sidious would have maneuvered everything in such a way that it all relied on one moment.
Yep.
But he would not have turned then, I don't think, if Mace was not going to execute Palpatine. Because really what pushed Anakin over the edge was losing that secret of how to keep Padme alive.
Yes.
And I think that Anakin wanted to get that out of Palpatine somehow through interrogation, through questioning for whatever trial he was going to have, etc. So it might not have happened then.
So that moment, he becomes Darth Vader, and then Palpatine issues Order 66 to the clone troopers.
And Anakin goes and wipes out all those punk, obnoxious little brats in the Jedi Temple.
Eric!
How awesome is that?
Eric! What the hell?
Oh, wait, is that not a good thing?
No,
it's not. I mean, that's horrible. That's horrible. That's what I meant to say. It's horrible.
Somebody that horrible, needs horrible to get thing. A psych ed.
Yeah, so Order 66. That was a really good montage of a lot of different planets that I'm really bitter that we didn't get to see in the movies.
I agree. Yes, 100%. And Jedi, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, some of them we got to see in episode 2. But like Ayla Secura, who was in the comic books pretty prominently. we asked Amy Allen at a Celebration, you know, if they gave her any training with the lightsaber or anything. She said, no, in fact, in episode 2, I was just kind of like swinging it around like a baseball bat. Like they didn't really give me a lot of, and that's okay because they basically cut around a lot of it. So I didn't really look that bad, which, you know, that's fine. And then in this though, like they kind of like, she started to pull her lightsaber out and then just kind of got shot from behind and fell over. So we didn't really get to see her with the lightsaber at
they
all.
They really shot at her. Just two shots would have been fine, guys.
Yeah.
Like, that was 20 shots.
And they you didn't see a single bullet hole on her body, though. I mean, they cut away quickly, but she had been shot like 8 times before they cut.
Yeah.
And, no burn marks, no I know they didn't use bullets, but like no bullet holes, no entry wounds, nothing.
Nothing.
Maybe she survived.
The blue.
Maybe she survived.
Yeah.
That's another story. That was before I started watching Clone Wars. This was one of the Jedi I really, really wanted to see. I was very captivated by her, and it was very sad to see her die. The other Jedi that I really, really wanted to see a little bit more of was Plo Koon. He is so cool and badass. And obviously, I mean, we did talk about Kit Fisto, but there were some Jedi that montage, like you said, that was so sad, so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And then Hoga dies, so that was pretty sad.
Yeah. Everybody hated that.
No, I just, it was sad.
For those who want more information,
Yoda dropped his stick. Yoda dropped his walking stick.
He did.
That was pretty sad.
And I don't know if he ever got it back. They could make a movie about that. Mace Windu getting his lightsaber back and Yoda getting his walking stick back.
Yeah.
Because the one in Dagobah, that could be a new walking stick. We don't know.
It probably is.
Probably is. There's lots of trees there. For those who want more information on the Jedi who were in those montages, Ki-Adi Mundi had a long comic book story arc that came out, I think, kind of as a prelude to episode one. Aayla Secura was in the comics. If you look at any of the comics involving Quinlan Vos, she was kind of a secondary character there. She figured in pretty prominently. Plo Koon, he was in some of the comics. I think he had some appearances in Clone Wars. I think he was known as a really good pilot, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I think he was in the Jedi Starfighter video game quite a bit, too. Who else is there? I mean, those were the three Jedi I can think of from the montage. That might have been it. Yeah, and the Boga. Okay.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, going from the scene at the Jedi Temple...
Yes, with all the headless kids.
Yes. He goes back to see Padme at that point, right?
No. Obi-Wan goes to see Padme.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Anakin goes to see Padme before he goes kill the kids.
Right.
That's right.
Oh, hey, honey, I got to run an errand real quick. Can you just? I'm going to be home a little bit late.
I need a new belt.
She's childbearing, right? Like, I mean, can he put those... You always, together,
said,
like...
you always said you wanted kids, right? Let me go. I'm going to go get some samples for you. And I'm going to bring back the heads and you can just pick the one you like. And
if he kills all the other kids, that makes his more valuable, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Interesting.
Well, and he succeeded because technically that's exactly what happened.
That was sad. Eric, come on.
What?
I don't know. That was a little bit gut-wrenching when they're like, what should we do? And lightsaber comes
still.
On.
The less you move, the less work I have to do.
That it's kid like a, that tries like to save Organa. Yes. That was sad.
Yeah, that was actually George Lucas's son.
He killed him.
Yep.
He did.
He's Anakin.
Yep. I forget the character's name. The kid actually had a name. In the movie, too.
That's sad.
But.
The Vader gets dispatched to Mustafar to eliminate all the heads of the Trade Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know what? George Lucas said something in the commentary that I think. You know, I think that one of Lucas's strengths is the visual storytelling. I think that what he doesn't always get across in dialogue, a lot of times he gets across in the way he frames shots, the way he edits pieces together. But the one thing that he apparently tried to get across that I didn't really get, he was talking about the fact that after Anakin dispatches all of the separatists on Mustafar and he's standing on that balcony, he said that that was supposed to get across that Anakin is self-aware and he's contemplating what he's done.
Hmm.
And that was kind of his first moment where he's alone and can kind of think things through. I didn't get that, though. When I'm watching that scene, I still saw this kind of burning in his face. And I saw him looking out over it like, yeah, I've killed these guys. What's next?
But there is a single tear.
But his eyes turn yellow at that point, right?
Yes.
His eyes, I think, were already yellow, weren't they? In the Jedi Temple?
No.
I think actually they might have been.
Are they?
Probably
They at least were during the fight on Mustafar when he was actually angry, killing everybody. Yeah, they were at least then. I don't know. I didn't get that was supposed to be a moment where Anakin is kind of looking back kind of as Anakin and thinking about what he's done and all that. I didn't get that from that moment.
I don't think so. I don't know. Just thinking back to it, I don't.
I got that as just a general, I am dark, I am bad moment. And just letting it soak in with the audience. I didn't realize it was a reflection.
No, I got it as, you know, the reason everything's quiet right now is because I done slaughtered everybody. That's what I got.
Right. So now, Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, so Obi-Wan went to talk to Padme to kind of get her to go see Anakin, go to where he was, because obviously she knew where he was going. And he stows aboard her ship. Padme confronts Anakin at Mustafar, which didn't go so well. She got herself choked out there, which is pretty much the end of her. I think that's what really killed her.
She died of a broken heart.
No, she died of a broken heart.
Obi-Wan at the top of the stairs being the motivation for her choking, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I obviously I didn't like Anakin in that moment, but I liked that storytelling. I think that they handled that well. I think that people do stupid things when they're in love and they think that that's threatened somehow. And I could totally see the delusion of jealousy being something that would help tip Anakin over the edge against Obi-Wan. And to be fair, as strongly as Anakin wanted to find a way to save Padme, his bond with Obi-Wan was really strong too. So there needed to be something specific and very, very personal to get in the way of that. So romantic jealousy, even if only perceived, is one of the few things I can think of from a storytelling point of view that could really succeed at making Anakin turn against Obi-Wan.
I didn't really see it as jealousy. I saw it more as betrayal, that Padme told Obi-Wan where he was.
But he could have perceived it as bad.
Yeah.
But in reality, but also
jealousy
was not.
In regards to not just like an intimacy sort of jealousy, but
fair.
It ties together in the betrayal thing. Yeah, there was a connection between Obi-Wan and Padme, that Padme would share things with Obi-Wan in such a way that might put Anakin at risk or get him arrested and brought back to the Jedi or whatever. Like that betrayal indicated some sort of connection with Padme and Obi-Wan that worked against Anakin.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I mean, would Anakin have ever told Padme what he did at the Jedi Temple? I don't think so. And I feel that the fact that Obi-Wan took it upon himself to tell her, and then she confronts him about it, and then she for herself sees what he has become, that is also something that Anakin would not have taken well. Obi-Wan has just taken something that he loves. Anakin sacrificed so much for Padme, and for her to turn away from him,
I think Anakin would have told her at some point, because I think Anakin is very much wrapped up in justifying his actions. And I think that he would have tried to justify this to her in such a way to explain that it was important because he was saving her. But I think I agree with you, Andrea, that, I mean, he wanted to be the one to get to make that explanation. And by Obi-Wan bringing it to her attention instead, now her first impression of the situation is tainted by someone else, and he's never going to recover that. He's never going to be able to convince her that this was the right way to go. So he's lost that opportunity now. In doing so, basically has lost Padme.
And she does say, "You're breaking my heart." That was a very emotional part. I really like the way that Natalie Portman says that line. And again, that's just her ultimate.
I think that was one of the examples of her acting ability superseding the dialogue. Some of the dialogue there was a little iffy, but yeah, the acting there, I think was spot on. So now the lightsaber battle.
Oh yes.
That was, you see, this is where I'm torn. This third act here, I want to say, first of all, that lightsaber battle between Anakin and Obi-Wan is the best out of any Star Wars movie ever. I loved the one with Darth Maul.
Yep.
But this was just absolutely intense. The choreography was unbelievable. Not just the best lightsaber battle, but one of the best melee battles in film, I think. I mean, the choreography was just insane. And they didn't speed the film up or anything. All of that was actually done full speed with months and months and months of them studying the choreography. They started with like reed sticks, and then they moved into metal, and then they couldn't use metal anymore because they kept, you know, hitting the saber so hard they were bending the metal. They had to go to carbon fiber. It was just insane. Now, that being said, I hated the interspersal of the Yoda and Palpatine battle because, number one, Palpatine, I love Ian McDiarmid's performance in the entire saga, but this one section I couldn't stand because I felt like he came across as a clown. I felt like he was channeling the Joker, but like in not a very effective way. And the scene itself, I felt, was too reminiscent of the beginning of the second Matrix movie. It felt too much like a video game. It was all CG. And it was good CG. But the Anakin Obi-Wan thing, it felt so real and so visceral. And then cutting over to this thing just, it didn't do it for me. I liked Yoda versus Dooku, but Yoda versus Sidious to me, and there were aspects of it I like. I liked the fact that it was very vertical in the Senate chamber, and I liked the whole telekinesis thing of throwing the Senate chairs and stuff like that. But still, and especially the actual literal lightsaber part of it too, it just, I don't know, didn't work.
I think if they expanded on the lightsaber battle itself, or added more interspersing lightsaber attacks in between all the other attacks that were going on, the throwing of the chairs, the throwing of lightning, the pushing each other with the force. If they did more lightsaber attacks, and I think that would have bridged that gap that you're looking for.
Yeah, that might have done it. And I also wonder maybe too, and I'm surprised to say this, but now that I'm thinking it through, if they maybe put some dialogue in there too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, maybe to make it a little bit more personal, like, you know, Yoda had worked with Palpatine for years. And I kind of feel like there should have been some sort of what's the word of a closure.
Yeah.
For those two characters as characters. Instead of just as combatants, you know?
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying. Absolutely. That would definitely help.
But at least, I mean, the Obi-Wan and Anakin lightsaber battle, I mean, the battle itself was intense. The choreography was intense. But then the emotional moments, mm-hmm. you know, Anakin laying there just before he gets lit up, literally, saying, you know, I hate you. And then Obi-Wan standing there saying, you know, Anakin, you were my brother. I loved you.
Yeah.
That was intense. That was
heavy.
Yeah. I mean, that's right up there with Luke throwing his lightsaber away at the end of Return of the Jedi and saying, no, I'm not going to fight my father.
Yeah.
I can feel the good in him. And then, you know, the redemption of Vader. I mean, that scene with Obi-Wan and Anakin right there was one of the most intense in any Star Wars movie, I thought.
It's sad because you see Obi-Wan just kind of race him. That was...
Yeah.
Brother, or you can even argue probably son. I mean, he took him under his wing, watched him grow, and ultimately failed him because he wasn't able to help him as much as he needed to.
Watch the Clone Wars, and after 6 years or six seasons of that, you'll see how tight they actually become.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I think, makes that scene all the more poignant.
Yes.
And it is, too. It's a lot of, I mean, he admits, like you said, Andrea, that you know, Anakin, I failed you. He doesn't say the Jedi failed you. He doesn't say the Council failed you. He says, I failed you. And I don't think that Obi-Wan did as much fail Anakin as the Jedi in general failed him. But Obi-Wan takes that on himself and takes ownership of that. And
that's because he feels responsible for actually volunteering to train him.
Right. And it's rough because in a lot of ways, Obi-Wan is the hero of the prequels.
Yeah.
And here he is at the end and he fails.
Yeah.
You know, he failed to save the Jedi. He failed to save Anakin. He failed to keep the Sith from taking over. The entire trilogy from the hero's point of view is a failure.
Yeah. He fails to kill Anakin. That's
even that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is a failure for the good guys. Roll credits.
Now, yeah. If you took the entire prequel trilogy as act one of the larger story, that actually makes sense and it works.
Yes, it does. Yeah. But, you know, back in 2005, we thought this was going to be the last Star Wars we're going to get to see. So while we knew this was coming and all that, it was still kind of like a dark place to chronologically in production chronology anyway, to end things. So, you know, it's good that we ended up getting more Star Wars after that.
They couldn't really end it any other way, though.
Yeah.
They're kind of shoehorned into that one.
Well, speaking of ending, we need to wrap up the show here. Before we go, do you guys have a pitch
suggestion? Oh, no, wait. Let me close the whole entire movie.
Okay, well, you got to do it quick, though, or I'm going to be late for work.
Oh, that's true. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so it's very interesting that as Anakin is being constructed, Padme is giving birth. You see the contrast between Padme and Anakin, her screams of birth, his screams of him rebirthing. And then his first breath as Darth Vader with the suit is Padme's last breath of life. So I thought that was very interesting how that was shot. And that's it. Goodbye.
Well, and the whole irony at the end that he did all of this in order to save her and then he's the one that killed her.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
And listen, the whole no thing, again, I feel like the reason that didn't work, I feel James Earl Jones' voice on that, it just felt overacted.
Yes.
And it was the voice. It wasn't Anakin's movements. It wasn't a Hayden Christensen thing. It wasn't a directing on the set. I think they just needed to do a few more takes on that audio work and take a different take from James Earl Jones, who is a phenomenal voice actor and easily could have done it. I think they chose the wrong take.
Yep.
So.
All right. Let's do this quick. Eric's pitch.
Yes.
Okay, you ready?
No.
All right. Going to do it anyway. So one of our favorite characters, Boba Fett, gets shot and tossed into the Sarlacc pit. And after being down there, the skiffs leave. He fires up his jetpack, gets out, and he's done being a bounty hunter for at least the next little while. He's done. But he's still on Tatooine, so he decides that there's lots of sun there. So he's going to open a tanning studio. Go.
All right. So... he decides that Mos Eisley, given all of the turmoil that's been there after, you know, Jabba's sail barge getting destroyed, Jabba himself no longer being around. Jabba had big competition there from a female Wiffed character, and I don't remember what her name was, but there was another crime lord who was there in Mos Eisley. So Boba Fett's like, you know, I'm done with that whole organized crime thing. I'm going to head back to Mos Espa. You know, it's another big city. There's people coming in and out there. They've got the pod races. There's a little bit of tourism. I'm going to go set up shop there. So he goes and he gets a little patch of real estate, sets up a shop for a tanning salon. And some customers roll in from out of town and they're like, so what's this deal? And he's like, well, this is set up a tanning salon. Where better in the galaxy to go to get a tan than the sands of Tatooine? And they said, okay, so Can't I just like lay out in the sun anywhere on Tatooine? I don't understand. He's like, well, no, here we have, I mean, we've got different oils and lotions and stuff like that. And we can really, depending on what species you are, we can make it so that you get the optimal tan for your species. Oh, and trust me, I've been all over the galaxy. I'm a former bounty hunter. I know my stuff. Okay. I'm not from this rinky-dink little planet. I've been everywhere. Okay, so do you have any examples of how this... take your helmet off. Let me see how you look. He takes his helmet off, and they're like, oh, that's gross. Put your helmet back on. What is that? And he said, well, I mean, this isn't from the tan. I've been getting digested for a little while, but I'm okay now. I'm better. Now, this is not from... No. Don't go by that. Like, yeah, you know what? I think we're just going to go watch the pod races. And I think, you know, we're just going to like strip down to some bathing suit sort of thing. We're just going to hang out there in the stands. It's all good. But thank you for your offer, because this, you know, I'm sure you're going to do really well with your business here. Sounds great. Thanks. And so they leave. And he keeps running into this over and over again. I mean, not the whole thing. He knows not to take his helmet off anymore because, ew. But... he realizes, you know what, this is not going to go well. And so finally Dengar shows up. He's like, Bobo, what are you doing here? And he's like, I just thought that, you know, I'm still recovering. I mean, have you been in a Sarlacc? I mean, that crap is painful. I'm not ready to get back in the pilot seat again. I mean, that's crazy. He's like, dude, that must've been messing with your head or something. You, I think maybe you're like a little messed up, like, you know, the chemical version of a concussion or something from being down there too long. How did you get out anyway? Well, I took a couple of concussion grenades and blew it up from the inside out and crawled up. He said, yeah, concussion grenades. And you're not thinking straight, you know, put two and two together. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. And Dengar says, hey, come on, let's go back to the Houndstooth. And we'll get you back over to the Slave One, and we'll get you back up and running again. I'll help you out for a little while, but no, dude, this is like trying to sell water on Kamino, dude. This is not smart. Like, okay, all right. And so they get back in the Houndstooth, which is Dengar's ship, and they fly off, and Dengar ends up getting him back into the swing of things in the bounty hunting game again, and. Starts getting his name back out there, and all is good and right in the galaxy.
Amazing. Nicely done, sir.
And then we never have to go back to Tatooine again. Because Tatooine.
Yay!
All right. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of The Outer Rim. We want to know what you think of episode 3. And the stuff we talked about, the turn of Anakin into Vader. And, you know, we're going to go back later and talk about all of the movies overall as well, and kind of pitting them one against each other, and how we rank them and things like that. But for now, let's just talk about episode 3. Let us know what your thoughts are. You can email us at outerrim@randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram for the Random Chatter Network at Random Chatter, for all of our Star Wars shows at Force Chatter. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. Fred, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Freddy Wong Kenobi. That's FreddyWonKenobi.
All right. And Andrea?
You can find me at KatzBears. That's KatzBears.
All right. We would love if you would help support the show. Leave us reviews anywhere you're getting this podcast. But more importantly, share us out on social media when we have a new episode posted. Share us out, retweet us, talk about the show. I mean, and talk about thoughts on episode 3 and Anakin's turn into Vader and stuff like that. And comment, include us in the tweet, mention us, and we'll get involved in the conversation as well. And tell your friends about us, too. There's a lot of talk about Star Wars going on right now. Good talk. Not all of it's bad. That's just a little tiny vocal minority out there. There's a lot of good talk about Star Wars, and include us in that talk. Let them know, hey, you know, there's a podcast network. They've got Echo Base. They've got The Outer Rim. They've got a lot of good discussions going on. And, you know, give us a shout out. You can hang out with us, too. We have a Discord server, which you can get to for free at randomchatter.com/discord. We've got different channels for each one of the podcast shows, including this one, as well as kind of a main lobby and announcements channel, stuff like that. Now, if you donate anything at all, even just a dollar a month through Patreon, half of the cost of a soda at most drive-through restaurants. Then you unlock the entire Discord server. We've got a lot more channels. I think 50 or 60 additional channels beyond that. Most of the vast majority of them all very active. Sometimes I have a hard time keeping up, but that's okay. You've only got to participate in the channels you're interested in. And we have ones for a lot of different interests, whether it be entertainment-based, Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, gardening, hiking, whatever. We've got it there. So come hang out with us. Again, that's randomchatter.com/Patreon. And to join the Discord channel, randomchatter.com/Discord. Finally, the music you hear in this podcast is the Cantina Band Finale by DJ Elliot and the Silly Sassetton Sounds. All trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care. It's a trap.